I gotta let knowledge be heard.
All right, you're tuned into another edition of Highlander Newsroom, hosted by myself, editor of the Highlander newspaper, Miles Andrews Duvet, and just one of us here.
Evan Ismail, a news editor now.
New news editor.
New news editor.
Congrats, man.
Thank you.
How's it feel to be on the throne?
Feels pretty good. I'm happy to be where I am, so.
That's good, man. Yeah, I'm happy you're here, too. I was trying not to get stuck with you, so we brought someone else along.
I'm not hard to work with.
Yeah. So we brought someone else along. You want to introduce yourself, Summer?
Yeah, hi there. My name is Summer Schaefer. I'm a fourth-year political science law and society student, and I'm excited to be on this show.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in. Mm-hmm. The reason we have her on is because we're going to talk in depth about the gender studies requirement that is attempting, has long for a long time, but trying to get passed through the academic senate. And if you pick up at issue 30, right, we're already on 30.
Are we on 30?
Yeah, we're on 30. I think so. Yeah? Okay.
Yep, 30.
And yeah, you pick up issue 30, you'll see it on the front cover. We also did our editorial around this topic. And yeah, we just want to get more insight on kind of, because it's been your, I guess we can say, brainchild in a way, right? And
yeah,
you've been trying to get it passed for a while. So can you kind of talk about that process, I guess? Like, kind of what compelled you to start, like, you know, pushing this initiative forward and, like, how that was for you?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, I want to say thank you for putting us in the editorial. I think that the requirement is something that is, that should be known by students, and so I appreciate all of the work that you all have put into bringing awareness to it. I started on this my first year. I was just like a bright-eyed first year and wanted to get involved in lots of different things. I had started with Lean In, which was a gender equality club that I had started and founded myself and was the president of, and worked with some amazing individuals to put on big programs, have professors speak on topics, get students excited and involved around the topic of gender and sexuality. And unfortunately, not that many students were engaged. So when I had heard that a professor was working on a requirement for gender and sexuality, I thought this was a great opportunity to be a part of it. And I knew that I, since I had been also a part of the Associated Students for UCR, our student government, I had known that I would be able to contribute in that way to this requirement. So Professor Jane Ward was the professor that had been working on this requirement. She inspired her students in one of her gender studies classes to work really hard on this, do a bunch of research, get to know what are their schools in the country, and there's barely any. There's like three or less in the entire country that have a requirement of this kind. And she thought, why not UCR? Why not UCR be the first ones to have a requirement like this? And so a whole bunch of passionate students had been working on this the entire year, but unfortunately, a lot of them were fourth years and were graduating. So there were only a few of us to continue on this project. Each year, it has been supported by our associated students with unanimous standing vote. Each year, we have accumulated more students to the petition, having over 700 students on the UC for Gender Studies page, and our petitions and lots of other documents that we have spread around to gain awareness and excitement and momentum around this requirement. So it had gone to the Academic Senate, and then from there it goes into committee, and there's a whole bunch of different committees it's on. The Academic Senate has a very long, arduous process for having these kind of requirements passed, just because they want to be very thorough and make sure that any kinks get worked out. So we worked really hard on getting these to the committees. But the committee, each year, each committee gets new people to be put on it. I know, it's kind of a complicated thing.
Right.
Yeah. So there's lots of different committees, and each committee has different people on it, and each year there's new people. So the same problems arose every single year, making it kind of a cycle where it's just going to roll out and die. And in order to prevent that, this year I've really tried to regain the momentum myself, since everyone else who had been working on it has graduated, in order to make sure that this requirement is actually put on an agenda and has a concrete goal for people to actually pass it. Only faculty and professors can vote on the requirement, and we just need it to go to a vote so that people can actually, like, make some kind of change or make some kind of conclusion come to this requirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you recently brought it to ASUCR, right, again, the Senate, right, just to get there, because they had previously passed a resolution in favor.
Yeah.
And this was, like, kind of them doubling down and saying, like, hey, this should be, and unanimously they voted, like, this should be a requirement in place, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I felt it was important that we show that there is continuous support from our student government elected by our student body in this requirement, and also the academic or the student senate had also worked on phone banking for this requirement as well. So not only did they support it with a vote, but they also supported it with acting in favor of the requirement by trying to push this requirement along in the committee.
Mm. Yeah, and we should clarify the requirement would be for undergrads to, it would be a part of the basic requirements we already have, right, for breadth?
For incoming freshmen or for everybody?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
So the requirement is for all colleges. It would apply to all undergraduate students, only undergraduate.
Right.
And it would start as soon as it passed and went through all the proper committees to make sure that it is a full sound requirement with the first incoming freshman class.
So would that mean like Miles and I would have to take it, or would it just be for freshmen?
No, so it would only be for the incoming freshman of the year that the requirement is sound,
right,
and has gone through committee, which means even after that it is voted in favor, say it is voted in favor, then that means that they still have to go through a process of making sure the requirement is perfect before students can actually start.
And we have the professors and faculty in place, or is that still something that needs to be addressed as well?
Professors and faculty
in place to, you know, teach like within this field for the requirement. Like,
yes. Yeah, so, yeah. As I stated in the article, and I have some other commonly asked question pages that I've tried to put on our Facebook pages so that anyone can see them at any time. Mm-hmm. There are over 300 courses that we had put into the requirement that already exist with professors and faculty working on them that would apply to this requirement. So there's not a lack of courses or classes that students would be able to take for this requirement. It's a very broad spectrum of things that would be included under this. And so oftentimes people are concerned, well, oh, will I be forced to take like a women's studies course? Well, no, there's like a variety of different types of things that would be covered under this requirement. There could be one on Beyonce, or there could be one on masculinity, or there could be one on the varying spectrum of sexuality. It's very broad.
So now, if I heard you correctly, you said that this is already a requirement in like a few other universities nationwide?
Yeah, so we found one in New York, one somewhere in the Midwest, and there are other colleges that have things that are similar. So Berkeley has something that is kind of like a ethnic and gender studies requirement combined, like it's all inclusive, but it's not specifically on gender. And it's important that the two are distinct, especially on our campus, because ethnic studies deserves the emphasis of having its own requirement, and so does gender studies.
So do you know how successful these are on these campuses? Like, are students like involved? Like, do you know like how students feel about these on these other campuses? At Berkeley, for example, since it's a UC?
Yeah, so at Berkeley, people are very supportive of the requirement that is kind of inclusive to ethnic and gender studies. Nationwide, we haven't really done any specific research on students and how they feel about it. However, I do believe that they were in strong support of it, because the reason that a lot of these gender studies requirements have come about is through students. Students want for them. Students who feel that it is something that is important and should be valued by universities.
Mm-hmm. So I do have one more question. Like, this is coming from like for me personally. What would you say to people who like maybe like myself, who maybe don't agree that there's a spectrum of gender, or you know that there is only two genders and that's male and female, and that you know maybe that you know gender studies is not really a class that's very necessary? What would you say to those people who have those questions?
Yeah, so I believe that on universities around the world, and any university, that people go there to learn new things that they're not always comfortable with, and also to challenge themselves to learn about things that they may not necessarily agree with. So I have taken classes about things that I may not necessarily agree with. However, it's interesting to learn about them and to try to expand my knowledge of those things and how other people think and believe, because that affects the world around me, and it will affect my professions in the future. It'll affect lots of different things in my life. And knowing that gender and sexuality is something that is very prominent in our day-to-day lives, it affects a lot of different things. It affects our careers. It affects, like, for example, like STEM majors have a lack of women in those fields. So even though they may not really be discussing gender and sexuality in those majors, it still really affects them.
So one more question. Now, I'm in a major, I'm political science. So now professors, from my experience, do have a habit of injecting their opinion into what they teach, which, I mean, it's politics, so that's you know, understandable. Now, for me personally, I'm a conservative. I am a Republican, registered Republican. Now, what would you say to the, what happens for students that are worried about their professors are going to inject their opinion into it and be like, well, you know, like, all men are bad, or, you know, they're going to be like, well, there's a spectrum of gender and, you know, you're not allowed to say anything else. What would you say to people who are concerned that maybe their opinions that maybe differ from this, who maybe are maybe not completely recognized at a college campus, maybe a more conservative opinion? What would you say to people who are worried that maybe their opinion won't be valued if it's conservative?
Yeah, so I'm glad you bring this up, because it has been a concern that many students have brought up about this requirement. I feel that I want to make it clear that in no way does this requirement control or tell professors how to teach, and that I believe that the university hires professors and faculty that they think would be a great addition to our campus and would allow for a open space for students to learn and communicate. I don't think that anyone's opinion should be shut down, or that anyone should be shut down by someone saying, you know, I hate all men, or all men this, or and so on. However, I do know that sometimes that happens, and that those can be outliers, and sometimes people have classes that can kind of derail, or a conversation where other students are kind of participating in this kind of negative space. And I want to make that clear that that's not all the classes, and that since there's such a broad spectrum, you could enroll in a class that you feel more comfortable to have that kind of dialogue in. Mm-hmm. For example, classes around masculinity, where people, where men might feel more comfortable to be a part of those spaces, or perhaps how conservatism and gender collide. Maybe that's a class. There's lots of different classes that are going to be offered that are going to be inclusive to all different types of mindsets.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, I know I said one more question, but this is very interesting for me. So now, in the event that maybe students, like, for example, it's a STEM major and, you know, they're chemistry or something, and they don't really, this is not something that they're really concerned about. They're more interested in, you know, OCHEM or organic chemistry or something like that. And, you know, they just don't put as much effort as they would into this class, and maybe it doesn't yield the grades that they need. And, you know, their GPA drops and they're mad, and they go into their counselor and they're like, well, you know, this is ridiculous. I shouldn't have to take something like this. Now my GPA is messed up. You know, what would you say to students who may not put value in this and may not pursue it to the extent, and it causes problems, you know, for counselors and these students and stuff like that?
So that's the very reason I feel like we need a requirement and not a module or not a club based around this topic, because students who wouldn't otherwise take a class like this may be the ones that really need to expand their minds around that topic. And we're arguing that gender and sexuality is a topic that needs to be focused on, needs to be talked about, regardless of your major. Similar to the ethnic studies requirement, where we as an institution decided that ethnicity and culture was something that we really need to value as an institution, we need to educate students on it. We feel also that gender and sexuality should also be valued in this way.
That's interesting. You got anything else?
Yeah, I mean, is there any effect this would have on graduating time, or has that been addressed as well?
This would absolutely not affect graduation time. That's a great question. Students, it is in replacement of a already existing additional humanities requirement. So you would still have the option to include any humanities requirement that you want. So that you're not getting rid of that. But since instead of it being two additional humanities requirements, it would be just one, and it would instead be a gender studies requirement and replacement.
So I do want to bring up something that we addressed in our editorial. It was, you know, like you said, there are hundreds of classes that can qualify for a gender studies requirement. So if there's so many classes that can qualify, then why have a gender studies requirement?
To require students who wouldn't normally take the requirement to take it. So we have all of these courses, but it's the same students that are taking them, mm-hmm. and that's not really allowing for all of our students to have that kind of education, which is, you know, similar, and I'll reference back again to the ethnic studies requirement.
Right. Yeah. So what's the timeline looking like? I know there's been like a long, because you brought this your first year, right?
Yes.
4 years in, and we're near the end of your fourth year now. Is it looking like next year is the time for it to get passed? Or?
So I am working adamantly to make sure that, that it is on the agenda for the first fall divisional meeting.
Okay.
I have received word from Chair Professor Rodriguez several times that this will indeed happen after hearing several times that it would be on the May 23rd divisional meeting or even before that. It was going to supposed to be this fall. So I'm trying to make sure that it is actually on the agenda, because once it's on agenda, it can't be taken off. The reason it has taken so long is because they're trying to be thorough through committee. However, they have gone through all of the processes, and now we just need to make it happen. We need to make the vote happen.
Yeah, because it seems like an absurdly long time, even if you're going through the processes. And I know there's like constantly shifting committees, as you said, on an annual basis.
Yes.
So, but the fall divisional meeting, you said?
Yes.
For sure. Yeah, and Rodriguez is quoted in the article saying he guarantees, or nothing is a guarantee.
Nothing, right.
He says nothing is a guarantee, but he believes it will pass, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
What that means, you know, we don't know. And I don't know what your take on that is, if you have any optimism.
I think it's really great. I do appreciate the support I have been getting from faculty and professors and from Academic Senate members who have been working on this with me for the past 4 years. However, I think actions speak louder than words, and so I'd really like to see those things put into action.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, anything you'd like to add on the subject before we close out?
No, I really appreciate you all having me on here. I would just mention that if any students want more information about this, that there is a website that, or there is a Facebook page called UC Students for Gender Studies that has a petition on it and also has more information about the requirement.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you. Again, the article you can find on the front page of the Highlander, and as well as our editorial, I think that's on page 10 this week, actually. So, yeah, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Joining us. Again, that was Summer Schaefer talking about the gender studies requirement that they're attempting to get passed and have been attempting to get passed for the past 4 years here. And look out for the fall divisional meeting. Potentially could be on the agenda for the Academic Senate and could be implemented, or at least work toward being implemented and have some progress by next year. But yeah, so we have a couple more things we want to get to. Namely, there have been some updates from the Chancellor's office, right? He did say, you're familiar with the event center, right?
That's
supposed to be built. Mm-hmm. So those who aren't familiar, they're, as you know, family student housing is due for demolition. The original date was June 30th of this year. That's been slightly delayed to around September. But nevertheless, the Canyon Crest family student housing facilities will be demolished this summer. And with that, one of the plans, along with student housing, along with a number of eateries and other corporations, was to have an event center in place. This, according to Chancellor Wilcox, has been delayed. Namely, from what I've heard from Andy Plumley, namely because they are looking for someone to sponsor it, and they have not been able to achieve that yet. And so that's currently where we're at. There's been a series of campus conversations that took place over the course of the last quarter that Chancellor and maybe some faculty and maybe some members of the community would go out and just kind of air on a particular subject. So were you able to attend a couple of those?
Yeah, I attended one on food insecurity.
Okay.
And it's basically just, you know, like professors, students, faculty, they all come out and they just talk about it.
Right. And they just recently held their last one. I believe there were five of them. And yeah, Chancellor's provided a general update on things. But the biggest thing to take away is that they're right now delaying the building of the event center. I think the general question to have is, like, do we really need an event center? I think we've probably talked about this before, but I don't personally believe it's necessary.
Yeah, neither do I.
I think housing is definitely necessary there. But, yeah, why don't you think we need one?
Go ahead, just seems like we spent all this money, and I already spend a bunch of money in quarterly fees on the rec center that I don't use very often, which I probably should, but I don't. And we have, you know, we have basketball courts, we have a baseball field, we have, you know, all this stuff that, you know, we have tennis courts, that volleyball, you know, we have all this stuff that we could, that we already have to host these events and for students to go and have fun and exercise and what have you. And I don't think that at the expense of family housing, we should be building an event center like that. That just, when you think about it and you really try to put those two together, they just don't relate. I mean, honestly, if we're going to be sacrificing family housing, I think that we should at least have maybe, you know, something like Glenmore be put in there or have more research facilities. It just doesn't really seem like, you know, for the cost, it's something that we should really be pursuing right now.
Yeah. And for clarity, there, housing is a definite addition to that facility area.
Okay.
Yeah. As you know, we're expected to hit 25,000 large student body by 2020. And I was talking to Andy Plumley, I believe it was last week. Yeah, I was talking to Andy Plumley last week. And among other things, one of the things he shared with me was just that they are going to build, I think, accommodate more for more than the 25,000, you know, large student body. They're going to have housing for families there. They're going to have housing for grad students as well as undergrads. And they'll eventually convert Falkirk as well into family student housing. Right now, the family student housing is just solely moving to Obon apartments, but Falkirk will be in place as family housing by 2020 as well. But yeah, it does seem like a bit over the top, right, to have an event center. And I think from conversations I've had, it's mainly because there is this somewhat of a dilemma between athletics and administration in regards to who can use the SRC, the older SRC, right?
Mm-hmm.
They obviously use that for basketball, volleyball, and recreational purposes,
mm-hmm.
but there also are events that are trying to, that they try to host there, the administration does, and it becomes a conflict of, like, whose is it, basically.
Right.
Also, it becomes a conflict of whose is it versus the students in athletics. So it's... basically, they want the event center for things like that, right? For to hold heat if there are any weather issues, to have spring splash and et cetera. So,
I mean, my only,
like cool, but
when I hear event center, I think like Staples Center. Like, I think of something like absolutely massive. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's something that's going to be on, you know, like a, maybe a smaller scale, and it's just going to be something that, you know, can accommodate something like heat or winter solstice and, you know, other events. But I mean, I don't know. When I hear event center, I just think of something like super grand that's going to take up like the entire space. I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah, I don't know, because there hasn't really been a blueprint for it.
Right,
so,
right. I mean, honestly, I just think that, yeah. I mean, maybe something could be fit in, you know, to accommodate, but I really don't think that in the grand scheme of things, an event center is really what we should be focusing on, you know?
Yeah. Well, they will have a, at the very least, they'll have like a university village thing there as well.
Ooh, a university village.
Yeah, like a, I don't know if it's going to be the same size. I doubt it's going to be the same size as the one we have now, but they'll have, yeah, like a number of like subways, bars and things like that, according to Plumley. So that'll be there regardless of the event center. But I think like that's kind of all you need, right? Just some of that and just more dorms. I mean,
yeah, yes.
25,000 is insane. And they've had I mean, you're living in the dorms now.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from experience. I applied. I didn't even get housing this year until I ended up submitting my contract for some of the campus on-campus apartments and some of, you know, I believe Falkirk and some of the others and Glenmore. And I ended up not getting it initially. So I signed a contract with another off-campus landlord. And then I ended up getting, like, a offer just, like, a couple of days ago. And I ended up rejecting it because I didn't have anything else. And it still would have been cheaper for me to be on campus. But so I think that it would be better if it wasn't just such a mess and we had more accommodations.
Yeah.
I mean, because they were guaranteeing us housing for sophomore, going to be sophomore first year right now. And then they're going to move on to sophomore students. They were guaranteeing it. And then now they're not guaranteeing it anymore. So it was a little bit of frustrating.
Yeah, and it's going to be even more difficult in the coming years, like between now and 2020, right? Because if you're demolishing family housing, you're losing 266 units for graduate students, and you're moving 166 into the Obon apartments. There's 166 units in Obon, right? But you're also moving 166 times like two or three students, you know, out of Obon. And you have nothing in family housing, right, and you're getting more students, the student body is increasing.
Right, it seems really unsustainable. So, I mean,
it's going to be in flux. They're going to have to increase the amount of triples, and they're going, which I think they're doing right now.
But oh, yeah, that, yeah, definitely.
I think that'll be throughout the rest of, you know, the current dorms. They're going to have more triples, mm-hmm. at least for the time being. And yeah, it'll just be yeah,
it'll be really, very crowded in the dorms.
Yeah, it'll
my
be
friend.
very crowded. Yeah. So it's going to be difficult, but I do like the idea. At least, you know, maybe not financially or economically, but I do like the idea of having, you know, more housing where it's at the family housing facilities, more, you know, vertically built housing.
Yes, I mean, definitely.
Yeah, the community is great at Family Student Housing, and I love it, but it is difficult to sustain. I can see the difficulties they have if they're trying to go to 25,000, which is another conversation in and of itself.
Yes, definitely.
But
I mean, you know,
yeah,
everybody wants to go to college now, you know.
Yeah, I'm checking time. Sorry,
okay.
I just don't know how much like we. It's just interesting, I guess, to hear that. Okay, we want to go to 25,000, which is cool. Like, we want to be a big campus, but. Then at the same time, you will hear Chancellor Wilcox and other members of the administration, well, I guess now former members of the administration, discuss that they want to, you know, be kind of like a Ivy League of the UCs or like the Harvard of the UCs, which is the antithesis of growing.
Yeah, you know, I don't really see how they're going to be able to do that when they, you know, they're talking about all these goals and they're making all these goals, yet, you know, we're having such a shortage of housing. It's like, well, how are you going to accomplish this? You know, I just don't really see how the disconnect for me is quite large.
Yeah. Ideally, there would be, I mean, I know they're building new research facilities and labs. Ideally, they would have internal improvements for the humanities buildings in particular. Like, you know, was it Olmsted
mm-hmm.
is run down. Even UNLH, the university lecture hall, is
yeah.
like seats that don't work and table.
Yeah, yeah, the heater, right. or the air conditioner, excuse me.
Right. Yeah, so hopefully those things don't go unaddressed as they work toward building and expanding the campus. But, I think priorities are kind of in flux in regards to the administration. And,
yes, definitely.
They definitely have been in the past year. Maybe they're improving now as they phase in and out. People of the vice chancellor's kind of office, but I guess that's where we're at. We're running out of time, so I don't want to like, you know, leave it on like a cliffhanger or anything. So
right,
anyhow,
next time conversation
yeah,
for next
yeah,
time
right. Anyhow, thank you all for tuning in once again. This has been Highlander Newsroom, hosted by myself, Miles Ames Duvet, Evan Ismail, and yeah, we were joined earlier by Summer Schaefer. You can catch us on the highlandernews.org website, and you can read about the things we discussed and more on highlandernews.org as well. And yeah, thank you to Eddie Valencia, Monica Taylor, Tina Bold, Elliot Fawn, Wolfgang Mowry, and all you for tuning in. All right, we'll be with you next week. Thank you.